Welcome back to the Jeff Porch Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thank you so much for listening. Still to come on the program this morning, Robbie McGee from the Porch Band of Creek Indians, from Alabama today, April Marie Fogel, Steve Flowers, and State Senator Chris Elliott. So make sure you stay tuned for that. But join us now. Always makes time for this audience here in Southwest Alabama. We're very appreciative of that. From the 2nd Congressional District, Congressman Barry Moore. Congressman, how are you?
I am good, Jeff. How are you doing, sir?
Doing well, doing well. Thanks for making time for us. We're always appreciative of that. I assume up in D.C. today, kind of walk us through what you're seeing. You know, you're hearing a lot of these reports about kind of what went wrong on January 6th, and they seem to be buried in a lot of news stories, but are they scaling back some of the security measures, does it seem?
Yeah, we're starting to see the outer perimeter defense, you know, it was around the Longworth office, Rayburn office buildings, all of that. They've taken that down, and now we just got a perimeter right around the main Capitol building itself. So there is some progress being made in allowing people access back to the Capitol and to their representatives. We continue to push for that. It's the people's house, and I think that people ought to be able to come observe what's going on and meet with their legislators and voice their ideas and opinions. And so we're pushing Speaker Pelosi to do that. Hopefully they'll continue to roll back security. We still have our guards. We've always had Capitol Police, but Pelosi turned it into Fort Pelosi there for a few months with armed guards and razor wire, and it really didn't look like the American Capitol that many of us love and recognize.
Yeah, and I think people are hoping things get back to normal. We'll see if Pelosi relents. Let's get into the news of the day. I think this has caught a lot of people, I don't say off guard, because we talked a lot about it during the 2020 campaign, but the effort in the House starting to, I guess, pack the court, expand the Supreme Court, add four more justices to it. Any reaction to that?
You know, again, it's frustrating to me to see how hard the Democrats will do anything to take power, how they'll violate pre-standing procedure. You know, the way they've been passing legislation with no committee hearings, with zero input from the minority party. When I say the minority party, we like about five or six flipping to have a majority. So it's not like they have a super majority here, but they are acting like there aren't Republicans on campus. We're not on the Hill, and we no longer have a voice in the process. So from a legislative standpoint, it's just been the left driving an agenda that most American people don't appreciate, that don't approve of. And you know, this is just another power grab by the left and the progressives under the Nancy Pelosi, Chuck Schumer, and Joe Biden regime, and has zero to do with what's best for our nation. But it's all about power and control. They are no longer listening to the party, the Republican Party, or the American people.
And I guess some other things going on there, speaking of power grabs. So there's a lot of discussion about a big infrastructure bill, but we're calling it infrastructure, and it appears to be something totally different, a lot of social spending. But it appears to me, and tell me if you think this is a fair assessment, that they decided, or they figured out, that infrastructure polls real well with the American people. So rather than have a discussion about anything else, we'll just call everything infrastructure and force it through that way. And that seems to be where, you know, people are headed. You're expecting roads and bridges. Instead, you're getting Medicaid expansion or whatever.
Exactly. And it is a Pelosi Trojan horse, much like the COVID relief package, which only 9% of the COVID relief, the $1.9 trillion we spent, actually went to COVID relief. This infrastructure package is $2.3 trillion, and only 6% is actually on infrastructure, what you and I consider infrastructure, which normally we would agree are roads and bridges. So they are now wanting to create these new agencies. I mean, one of my favorite on the list is $10 billion for the Civilian Climate Corps. Can you imagine giving $10 billion to an organization to come out and call them the Civilian Climate Corps? That's the people that say, we're from the government, we're here to help, that you don't want to ever see. And so it's just one of those things. They continue to these pet projects, these Green New Deals. This is not about infrastructure. Let us not be fooled. This is just a play on words to try to get the American people to kind of go to sleep on the deal. But we're here to raise our concerns. You remember, President Trump sat down with Pelosi a number of times when he was in actually trying to bring a real infrastructure program, and she got up and stormed out of the meeting. So this isn't about infrastructure. This is, again, about Nancy Pelosi, Chuck Schumer, and the Democrats and their wish list. This is a Christmas wish list in addition to the wasted money on COVID relief, supposedly that was COVID relief. This is another one of those Trojan horses, is going to continue to drill us into debt for the American people and the taxpayers way down the road. And I think this time it's not just going to be a tax liability. There's going to be some regulatory liability. It's going to be tough to see our way out of.
I mean, it really is Orwellian newspeak to say this is infrastructure. Well, this is human infrastructure. I guess the lesson here is with the court packing, with the infrastructure bill, and particularly, and I know you know this all too well, what's going on down at the southern border. It does. Elections have consequences, and maybe there'll be some kind of buyer's remorse or pushback in this upcoming midterm.
No doubt. We'll certainly take the Republican majority in the midterm. And I think that's, you know, I tell everybody we're playing defense as best we can here on the Hill, and I'll be on the floor today playing defense and trying to slow their roll and do what I can to help our cause kind of resist this push left. But it continues to be one of those things where we'll get the majority. The more they play this game, the more they push hard left. Obama lost 60 in the midterm thereabouts. Clinton lost 50-something. Democrats are going to lose the gavel in November and in the next election cycle in 2022. And hopefully we don't take a knee. We move the ball back to midfield and drive the conservative ideas and the will of the American people back to the stage of politics.
So and speaking of the southern border, it's not, maybe not as prominent as in the headlines, but that situation doesn't appear to me to be improving. I know there was a Senate delegation and then the House delegation here more recently. Is it improving, or am I far off in my analysis?
No, I think we have little to any idea of how bad it is really down there. We have now 172,000 migrants taken into custody last month. Remember, we arrested 8,000 in 2019. We're running out of space for them, and they're not testing. They're just allowing these people to come in. This catch and release. We're not testing them for COVID. The really, if you want to get right down to it, Jeff, the Mexican drug cartel controls the southern U.S. border in America right now. They're allowing passage through there. If you're smuggling fentanyl, if you're smuggling heroin, you're paying your way into this country by doing that. And the Mexican drug cartel have more handle on our southern border than the Biden administration ever thought about.
Yeah, and I mean, there's all these other implications, but I guess long-term, we're really looking at the short-term problem, the drug trafficking, the human trafficking. Long term, is this going to be what we have to deal with the next 4 years, where you have like kind of a weaken and nod, the so-called catch and release, and that's going to have a profound impact on labor markets, on you talk about infrastructure, taxing the infrastructure, on schools, etc. That these burdens, I don't think, are being really fully realized yet.
And that's exactly, I was thinking about the same thing yesterday. Think about this, Jeff. Now, we're paying American workers right now to stay home. And so there is a labor market vacuum that we are not filling with American labor. And then we're letting folks storm the southern border who are coming in here. They'll go to work under the table. They're going to displace. They're going to fill those slots and those jobs because the Democratic Party wants them to have those jobs. And then at the end of the day, the American workers have no place to go. And we've got to get a handle on the process and make sure that we get government out of this economy of ours and take less and less a role and let the private sector begin to fix things. And that means putting American people back to work, not let foreigners invade us and fill the job market and start to fill that vacuum, because it's going to be hard to get those displaced workers, those American workers, back to work.
Joined by Congressman Barry Moore here on FM Talk 106.5, represents the 2nd Congressional District. Congressman, you're looking at expanding the GI Bill to include families of fallen soldiers. Talk to us a little bit about what you're working on there. Fill our listeners in on what you're doing.
Yeah, so, you know, veterans have been near and dear to our heart, Jeff. And in my district, we have a lot of military, obviously, because we have Maxwell and you got Fort Rutgers.
How are we doing now? Mm-hmm. Can you hear me?
Okay, I got you now.
Military. All right, so you sound better. Still a fuzzy, but it's much better.
A lot of dependents of active duty. Well, I dropped a bill earlier this week. We call it the John McHugh Act. It's Colonel John McHugh. He was killed in action in 2010 by a roadside bomb in Afghanistan. And what we're trying to do is structure there's a dependents education assistance program that currently provides for those children that are basically recipients of these programs. But what we're trying to do now with this bill is make sure that the states offer in-state tuition for those kids. In other words, if the family's from Colorado and they settled in Alabama because they were stationed at Fort Rucker and they want to go to one of our state universities, that we give them in-state tuition and make these programs eligible for the Dependents Education Assistance Program, get it more online with the GI Bill eligible schools. So it's just a way to allow us to to better streamline the programs and make sure that these kids get a break on tuition, because they have a fixed amount of money coming in, and so we want to make it affordable for those families.
Congressman, finally I got to spend some time in Enterprise last weekend, New Brockton to be precise. You made a big announcement. You followed in Donald Trump's footsteps, which is tough sometimes, but you did so, and you're backing Congressman Mo Brooks for U.S. Senate. Just real quick, kind of give us, catch us up on that decision-making process and what you think of the Brooks candidacy.
Yeah, so Mo Brooks is obviously a staunch conservative, and I think the one thing, his track record, it's part of the reason I got behind him. I've known him for some time, but to watch him here in D.C., see he stays clear of the swamp, he takes care of the American people. He's a true conservative, and so often we elect people and they get to D.C. or get to Montgomery, wherever they're running in whatever district they're elected from, but once they get there, the system sort of gets its hooks in them, and they quit voting the district, start voting special interest. Brooks is a case of just a man who will stand for what he believes in. We need that in the U.S. Senate, and that's why I endorsed him Saturday. I think he's going to be an asset to our state. He's a true conservative. He really will be the voice of the American people. He's a populist candidate, much like myself, and so I was excited to get behind Congressman Brooks, and I look forward to him being Senator Brooks.
Yeah, and he's like you are, members of the House Freedom Caucus. But as you were telling the audience on Saturday, one of the few that got behind your candidacy in 2020.
Yeah, he knew I was a conservative, and he knew we needed, if we're going to drain the swamp, we've got to send those kind of people to D.C. who have the vested interest of the American people, are true populist. And so Brooks he encouraged me. He got behind me early, and then he, of course, got the House Freedom Caucus, Jim Jordan, Andy Biggs to come on board. And that made a tremendous, it gave us a shot in the arm, if you will, gave us an opportunity to continue campaigning and pushing our ideas and that sort of thing. And it's good to get encouragement from leaders like that in D.C. And Mo Brooks is one of those leaders. And so we're excited to get behind him. He was one of a few people who got behind us early on and believed in us. And I certainly believe in him.
Yeah, anybody that may not be familiar, Congressman Moore here, wasn't really given a chance by a lot of the prognosticators, but I think pulled off one of the bigger political upsets in recent Alabama political history. But, hey, Congressman, we're so grateful that you were able to give us your time this morning, and we will talk again real soon.
Thank you, Jeff. I appreciate your time, as always, and call me if I can ever help.
We'll do. That was Congressman Barry Moore on the line. We got to get a break in here. We'll be right back. This is Jeff Poore on the Jeff Poore Show on FM Talk 106.5.
I hope I die before I get old.